wasn't that really jump-starting the offense yet.
He's doing his best in Vargas.
He's only struck out once. Out of two times.
So far.
Vargas would have struck out three out of two times. Welcome everyone to episode 137 of the Talk to Contact podcast. My name is Cody Christie. I'm the Nodak Twins fan. And I'm joined this evening by E-Rolf Pleiss. We are without Jay Korn. He is traveling the East Coast of the United States. And Paul is out on the West Coast of the United States. But those of us still in the Midwest are here and are here to podcast and to talk all things Twins, MLB, and all other fun stuff like that. So, Eric, how's it going?
We're really dominating flyover country right now.
We are, yes. So, we are. I think we are taking it by storm.
Yeah, we're really repping it. Yeah, so it's going good. I subbed on a softball team last night.
Yep.
And I was 2 for 3 plus, reached on an error.
Nice.
So pretty good. Excellent OBP.
no extra base hits, though?
No extra base hits. No. Couple of ribbies.
Nice.
Couple
did you
of
score any runs?
I did not.
Oh, you're a left on base type of guy.
Yep. At third base a couple of times. And made a couple nice plays. I'm probably the best left-handed second baseman you'll see in a beer league softball game.
Nice. My team back in my post-college days, we also had left-handed second baseman.
Yeah, it's a rare breed.
They are.
You can just recognize talent, though. You just had a great manager on that squad last night.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. The Twins were pretty crappy since the last time we talked.
Yeah, it was depressing. I kind of built it up going in during last week's show, for those of you that didn't download it yet. But I built it up as this is a pretty important road trip that the Twins were embarking on, with games in Milwaukee and Cincinnati, and the offense has been stagnant to say the least. We had some poor pitching performances in some of the games from the starters, not lasting more than a handful of innings. Now it's all leading into this weekend's very big series with the Kansas City Royals. The Twins, if they were to sweep, could get within a half a game of the Royals, who just got throttled by Houston, got swept by Houston in a series here leading into this. Or the Twins could find themselves, you know, 8.5 games back as we're getting closer to the All-Star break, and that's a little bit deeper hole. Pretty important games going on. As we're recording right now, the Twins are in the midst of playing the first game of that series. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. It would be nice, I guess, an ideal world, yeah, they would sweep, but you really don't want to. You'd like to take at least 3, I would think, so you're gaining some ground instead of, a split doesn't really get you anywhere, and obviously you don't want to lose more than you win against them, so.
Yeah, 4-game series are tough, too, because, you're either losing big, winning big, or you get nothing. But I think a split versus the Royals on the road here would be a positive sign for this club. I mean, the Royals.
Well, the way they've been playing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one of those moral victories. But the Twins, after this series, then, they're going to get Santana back this weekend. He's going to pitch on Sunday.
Yep.
Apparently, he's going to be in the clubhouse doing interviews on Saturday night and then pitching on Sunday, which means the Twins will be halfway through the season. And even if they lose, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, You know, they're going to be halfway through the season. They're going to be a ball club that's still above 500. And that's huge. I mean, I think that I have been pessimistic or on this Twins club all year long, all winter long. I feel like you're kind of in the same boat. We've kind of been waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Uh-huh.
And it has a little bit in May, but after a really tough – or, sorry, in June. And after a tough start to June, they kind of leveled off at the end of the month. You know, but if they can stay around 500 for another month, you know, then things get really interesting. The problem for the Twins, though, is – I think they have like the fifth toughest schedule in baseball in the month of July. So they have like more games on the road than they have at home. They're playing tons of teams that are above 500, which is hard to do in the American League Central because right now the Twins and the Royals are the only teams above 500 in the Central. So, I mean, they have a tough stretch of games coming up, and this could be the month where the Twins fall off, or this could be when they, you know, if they can stick out in this month and come out of this, you know, all of a sudden now we have some exciting baseball to talk about through the rest of the summer.
Yeah, just to kind of go off of that, the Twins after this series with the Royals, they finished the first half with a nice little homestand where they play three with the Orioles and then four with the Tigers to close things out. But then they head on a West Coast road trip right out of the break with three in Oakland and three in Anaheim. And then they play the Yankees, Pirates, and Mariners to end out the month. So those were all at home, that last Yankees, Pirates, Mariners stretch. So yeah, I mean, there's some tough teams. There's some teams there that are in their division races, obviously, or near the top of their division. That AL East is kind of a hot mess right now, with not really any of the teams wanting to take full control of that division. So it's definitely going to be, you know, it's nice to get Santana in here and get, you know, it's like we're trading. I think we've said that a few times. You know, it's like we're trading for another a starting pitcher, and we didn't have to give it up a prospect. We didn't have to give up anything. You know, we're just sliding him in and seeing where things go from there. So, and you know, in a few weeks, hopefully Buxton's back. It'll be interesting to see if they keep him up here, depending on how the team's playing. Is Aaron Hicks going to be back up here? Could we see some other prospects come up? We're going to talk about Miguel Sano here in a little bit, but is a guy like Jorge Polanco a guy that could come up and, you know, fill in at shortstop? You know, we're getting to the point where, you know, maybe some of these prospects are going to help the team more than learning on the job down at AA or AAA, whatever it might be. Could Jose Berrios, he got promoted to Rochester this week. Is that someone that there might not be a spot in the rotation, but, you know, is he someone that can pitch out of the bullpen as the Twins are, you know, if they have a winning record in the second half here and are fighting for a playoff spot, maybe that's something that they decide to do. The Twins did that with players like, well, they had to do it with Johan Santana because he was a Rule 5 pickup, but Francisco Laureano started out in the bullpen. So they've done that with guys before to just get their feet wet. And we're seeing it with Alex Meyer now, too, but that was more for a few other reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, we should just talk about the Twins' active roster right now, the 25 guys that they've got in uniform tonight. So since we last talked, Alex Meyer did come up and made his debut last weekend when the Twins were in Milwaukee.
He hasn't been perfect.
Yeah, he looks like the Alex Meyer that we kind of saw before he went to the bullpen, right? So he's walking guys, he's erratic, he's got the big velocity, but he doesn't quite seem to have it all put together. And certainly the nerves of coming up and adjusting to this new level, that's a big part of it. And I think whatever it was working for him in Rochester over the last couple of weeks, so even though it was only, I think it was only like 9 appearances that we talked about last week, certainly you know, he can put it together and have those stretches. And I think as he gets more comfortable, we kind of saw this with Trevor May, you know, over the last couple of years, where until he really felt confident that he could get major league hitters out, whenever he ran into trouble, you know, it's that mental part of the game. You just start thinking on it and thinking on it and thinking on it. And pretty soon you're not playing baseball. You're just playing head games with yourself. You don't trust the pitch selection. Mm-hmm. You don't, maybe you're relying too much on the catcher or not enough on the catcher, or you're not making the pitch to the right spot. And so a huge mental game there. But I think, you know, the Twins will have an opportunity to work Meyer into some games and some lower level situations, get him some success and move forward there. So Meyer's on this roster. The other move we saw this week, Danny Santana came up, and he is on the roster right now as well. So we've got that going on for the Twins. Aaron Hicks is still not back with the big league club. He is still on the disabled list, but he's a guy that could come back any day now. You know, it sounds like he's ready to go in Rochester, as the Twins don't really have a center fielder right now.
Rosario's been filling in in center field more often than other guys, and that's fine. He's played a decent amount there down in the minor league, so it's not like last year where Danny Santana was playing some of his first games ever out there in center field when the Twins decided to use him out there. So Rosario, I'm a little bit more comfortable with him out there in center than some of the other options that the Twins could trot out there.
Right, and they've got Danny Santana, you know, up now, and he played some outfield last year, and I think they're comfortable with him there.
Yep.
If you're going to put this roster together, the kind of what they're running out there this evening with Santana in center and Escobar at short, if you're going to have to press those guys into service, the best defensive alignment, I think, probably is Santana in center and Escobar at short. You know, I mean, Santana's a stretch at shortstop. Escobar's a stretch in left field. And so put them both back into a position where they're a little bit more primed for success. You know, until you're going to be able to have Aaron Hicks back, or Robinson's going to be fully healthy, or, you know, Byron Buxton comes off the DL as well, and you can, you know, address that outfield situation. So, so Santana is up right now. And then, you know, the big move that was this week is the Twins called up the power banana himself, Miguel Sano. And Kenny Vargas, he got demoted, and not just down to AAA, but all the way back down to AA to take Sano's spot back with the Lookouts. So kind of a long fall for Vargas, but exciting to see Sano up. I mean, I didn't expect to see Sano this early. It seemed like the Twins had plenty of players that can play first base and DH that, you know, they could let Sano do something. But he's been, ever since that slow start to the year, he's been playing very, very well, hitting for power, you know, playing what has seemed to be pretty good defense as well. He's in the lineup tonight as a DH, but it seems like a young man who, if he can come up and be successful, could be up here to stay.
Yeah, we talked about this briefly before we came on started recording here tonight. But it would have been interesting to be in on that conversation with Vargas about, oh, not only are we sending you down, but we're sending you down to AA after he was doing pretty well. Kind of mashing at AAA when they sent him down there. So obviously some other roster considerations that the Twins are accounting for by sending Vargas down to AA. I would assume Sano is mostly going to be DHing during his time up here right now, because Plouffe is a superior defender to Sano at this point in their careers. I'm sure Sano will still be working with the major league staff to improve at that position. Plouffe's wife is also going to be having their first child here in the next few weeks, so Plouffe will be on paternity leave at some point, so that will probably be one of the first times we're seeing Sano get like multiple games in a row to play over there at the hot corner. Sano, I mean, as we're recording, he's had a few at-bats tonight. He struck out in one. He lined out to center in his first at-bat, so hasn't done a ton yet since he's been up. He hasn't like hit like 5 home runs or anything like that. It's fun to see him, and hopefully, I mean that we. I mentioned it earlier, but the offense has been pretty stagnant so far during this, as the month of June was kind of winding down. I mean, we saw some good pitchers. Johnny Cueto kind of ran through this lineup pretty easily a couple days ago here. And we'll see what happens. Hopefully, I mean, with Sano, you know what you're going to get. I mean, his power is legit. He's probably one of the best power prospects that was left in the minor leagues with all the call-ups that have happened so far this year.
Oh, him and his teammate Adam Brett Walker. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Adam Brett Walker might have more power than Sano, but he doesn't quite have the contact skills. Mm-hmm. And that's, you're going to see some of that with Sano as well. He has all that power. The contact skills are where he's going to be lacking. He's essentially an upgrade in every way over Kenny Vargas, right?
Yes.
He can play defense. He has more contact skills, he has more pitch recognition, control of the strike zone, and more power. So you've essentially taken Kenny Vargas and just made him into a much, much better player everywhere. So the team should benefit there. And, we mentioned that Kenny Vargas went all the way down to Double A. Cody, just for fun, because I know you write the minor league report once a week, same as I do over at Twins Daily. Who is the Rochester Red Wings regular first baseman right now?
Every time I write the Rochester, like I look when I'm going through the box scores and looking at who had a good night, I am thoroughly perplexed by some of the guys that are on that roster. There are Rodriguez's I don't know, and yeah, like there is probably 5 to 6 guys that are like fillers into that, the minor league veterans that they have signed for that team that I have no idea who they are.
Well, so the guy playing first base for Rochester, he is a homegrown player drafted by the Twins in the 28th round. And he's
one year
of 2008. So he's hung around for a while. He's an older.
We were like in college still.
Yeah, he's an older gentleman. He's from Chanhassen, so maybe knows Parker Hagemann, probably the same age. It's Nate Hansen.
Yeah.
And, Nate Hansen is essentially, I would say, is like a Brian Dinkelman type, right? So if he ever...
Oh, that's big praise from you.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I reignited my Brian Dinkelman love affair this afternoon on Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I got on thinking about him. I stared at his baseball reference page for about 10 minutes, just recalling those 2011 glory days. But Nate Hansen's the same type of guy. You know, he's just kind of worked through the system. He's there. He's filling a role. He's doing what he has to do. But, you know, it's... The reason I brought up Dinkelman here is because Dinkelman was such an organizational player and the Twins liked him so much just as a person and as a piece. It would have been super easy just to send Vargas to AAA and then send Hansen or someone else down to AA and find a way to do that. But like you said, there are some roster things going on at AA where they need a guy that can play some first base and DH down there as well, so... It makes the transaction sheet a lot easier when it's just two players moving instead of three or four, however many they'd have to do. But, yeah, Nate Hansen is your guy in Rochester, and Kenny Vargas is then back to AA.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned it. You know, I think people that don't follow the minor leagues, their impression of Kenny Vargas is a lot different than those that have seen his career progress. What the Kenny Vargas we saw last year is not the Kenny Vargas that had the trend that we saw throughout the minor leagues. He did some really good things last year, and that was great, but that wasn't the guy that Kenny Vargas was going to end up being. He's never been a top 5 prospect in the Twins organization or even a top 10. Yeah, I mean, he was on the outskirts of the top 10 like Danny Santana, too, was the same way. Santana had done some good things and was, you know, on that edge of those top 10 prospect lists for the Twins organization. But these guys are becoming what most likely they were going to end up being at this level. They're going to have some struggles. They aren't going to be those everyday regular players. We've got other guys in the system that hopefully are going to be those types of players that can fill an everyday role with the club. So we'll see what happens here with Vargas. But like you said, Sano's an upgrade in multiple ways.
Well, yeah, and I mean, just talking about Vargas, his prospect stock was never really high. So, you know, if you look into the prospect handbook and it has all like the Seth's and Cody's and Jeremy's like prospect rankings for the last several years, and you know, Seth is kind of the big Twins prospect guy. He has, in 2014, Kenny Vargas was 17th,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, and this is, it's kind of a deep system, but this is the year that he was called up and made his impact. He was barely in the top 20, hanging out with a guy like Ryan Eads, who had just had a disastrous 2014 season, and right behind a guy named Amoris Minier, who, you know, most people maybe even never heard of, unless you're like, really, really into the prospect world. So, you know, anything that we've gotten out of Vargas is a bonus right now. I certainly think that he, if he can learn to recognize a breaking ball and gets any idea of where the hell the strike zone is, you know, he could be a guy. And Vargas could be one of those guys that at some point, 3-4 years down the line after he's, you know, no longer with the Twins, could figure it out and be a guy, or he could just never figure it out and continue to be this streaky guy that we've seen with the Twins.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, long term, I mean, if Sano's going to be up here, Plouffe is under team control for a while. Maurer's kind of entrenched over there at first base. You know, what would Vargas's role be? A bench bat? You know, like what? Long term, I mean, Santana could be a backup infielder, but I tweeted this out yesterday as all this Sano stuff was dropping. Like, my ideal lineup right now, I'd rather have Jorge Polanco up here playing shortstop every day as well. I know that's throwing a lot of guys up there with not a ton of experience, but you know, I would rather have Santana be filling in and playing, you know, filling in at second if Dozier needs a day off, filling in at short when someone needs a day off there.
I'm okay with Escobar. You know, at least defensively he's going to make all the plays, and, you know, he's going to hit as well as Santana can. You know, I mean, I think that's a reality. And I don't know what Polanco could do if he's up here. I mean, he's not going to all of a sudden hit, but that's probably a toss-up between the two of those.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, back to what's actually happening. I feel like we got way off there. So Sano is up. He's here. It's an exciting time, right, to be a Twins fan. I mean, just think about this. Rosario's up. Buxton is up. I mean, he's going to be healthy soon. Alex Meyer is up, and Sano is up. And all these guys are up well before the All-Star break. You know what I mean? There's nobody even in their wildest dreams that was predicting all four of those guys would be on the Major League roster before the All-Star break this winter. You know, so we're seeing the wave of Twins prospects all of a sudden be here and having an opportunity on a surprising winning Twins team.
Well, that
these Twins could be playing winning baseball.
That's probably what helps, right? You know, if this team's 15 games under 500 right now, is there a reason to call up Sano?
Yeah, no, Sano is not here at all.
Yeah, Buxton, it was more out of necessity as a, we need...
roster construction.
Yeah,
more than anything.
Yeah, we need a center fielder where I think Rosario would still be up here. But yeah, Sano wouldn't be up here. Sano might have got bumped up to AAA, but yeah, it's definitely... Because the Twins are winning, we're seeing these impact-type prospects being called up.
So, but yeah, I mean, we have this wave. There was an article at Twinkie Town today kind of looking at the best prospect classes that the Twins have had come up through the system. And certainly we don't know what these guys are going to do long-term, but if Sano and Buxton are even, you know, three-quarters of the guys that they could be, and if Rosario just has like a, you know, a 6-year career only with the Twins, and he just kind of
is an average every day.
Player.
Yep.
You know, and then anything that you get out of Alex Meyer or if Jose Berrios still gets up here this year, I mean, this all of a sudden is a young team with a strong nucleus, you know, and all of a sudden you're going to be, I think you're going to see this later this year, especially if the Twins keep winning. You're going to start to see a lot of comparisons between this ball club and the Royals ball club that they've had, you know, a couple of years ago. And now all these Royals players kind of matured and grew into their roles, and then they had that second wave of prospects that kind of came to their team last year and got them to the World Series and has them where they are right now. There's a lot of similarities with this Twins ball club. They have a lot of young, unproven guys that have ceilings that are super high. And if they can just get a few of those guys to all hit at the right time, the Twins still have enough left in their system for there's going to be that second wave, that next push of guys to kind of fill in some of those spots. And they have some pitching. Ryan Eads, the guy I just mentioned, he had a disastrous last year, but he's put together like 6 of his last 7 starts have been very, very good, and he starts to look more and more like that first rounder where the Twins took him a year ago out of LSU. So there are still players behind these guys, and the Twins aren't going to have the number 2 prospect system again this coming winter. They're probably going to be like 10 to 15 at best because they're losing all that top-end talent, but that's what you want your system to do. You want these guys to grow and come in, and then you just need a couple of other high-ceiling guys behind them. And you know, Cole Stewart is still in this system, and, you know, Lewis Thorpe is going to come back from his Tommy John, and there's,
and still,
you know,
young.
Yeah, and they're, you know, so there's still guys that are in there that are going to have, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, they're going to be those supplemental pieces. So I think we'll kind of see that. And the Royals, what they're doing now, I think that's kind of where we could look to see the Twins. Or, you know, of course, what's happening in Houston is just totally different, right? I mean, I think that's a different kind of build, but still very similar. All their young guys also are up right now. And unlike, you know, the Twins, their young guys came up and all of a sudden they just started hitting the crap out of the ball right away. So they're kind of best case scenario. And then the Royals are kind of long term. This is what you have to look forward to as a Twins fan. We're going to have a young nucleus. It's all going to be together. So, you know, and it's exciting. They're all here. And then, like you said earlier, Santana's coming back this weekend. And that's just like trading for a player. And if the Twins get anything out of Sano over the next couple of weeks, all of a sudden your DH that you've been filling with Eduardo Nunez and a streaky Kenny Vargas this year, all of a sudden now you have a real weapon there that you get to sub in. When Buxton comes back, you'll no longer be having to worry about infielders playing in the outfield. You know, if this team is healthy, there's a lot of good things that can happen, and all of a sudden it doesn't take a lot. It just takes, you know, winning 8 out of 10 one more time this year before this team can count on being in wild card position and just have to then play 500 ball outside of that. So,
yeah.
Man, there's a lot of good things that can happen because they have gotten so deep into the season and they have these wins and they're there. But at the same time, this can all go away in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, that's
especially with that
that's
schedule
what's scary
we're
about
talking
it.
About.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fun. So, I don't know. I just wanted to talk about...
Yeah, I was scanning quickly, just I've... As we, at Twins Daily, we've been counting down the top 10 prospects in the Twins system, and I had thrown together my own top 10 to be part of the rankings, or we compile the rankings, and, you know, if we all have Buxton 1, then he's 1, and then if, you know, it was like a debate who's 2 between Sano and Berrios, but yeah, if Berrios makes it up, and Buxton's here and Sano's here, you're looking at someone like Nick Gordon or Jorge Polanco being the number one prospect in the Twins system. Rosario's up.
Maybe Kepler has done this year projects him up, because he might have even been hitting better than Sano at Double-A this year with what he's done. You're essentially all of your best prospects could legitimately be on this team when we get to September.
Yeah, the only guys I don't, so like the guys I have in my top 10 that wouldn't be up this year possibly are Gordon, Kepler, Stewart, Gonsalves, and Tyler J. But we could see Tyler J, I guess. I mean, if this team is contending in September, he could be up here as a bullpen guy.
Well, yeah, and then, I mean, also, I think a guy that you ranked in your top 10 this past winter, Nick Birdie, right? He was the college reliever he could have just rocketed through the system, and instead he hasn't been able to put together consistent outings and continue to throw strikes, and he actually, this week, he got demoted from AA back down to high A Fort Myers, hoping to get him right. So, you know, pitching can come and go in an instant, certainly, but a lot of young kids, I mean, this is a year of the prospect, I think, overall in Major League Baseball. We're seeing tons of these, you know, top 50 prospects coming up, but also, you know, just with the Twins, so many good guys that are either going to be with this team or right on the cusp. So, pretty neat. You mentioned Berrios, that he's up at AAA.
Yeah, got the bump to AAA. He's only 21. So that's pretty cool. He had done very, very well. I mean, with Myers' poor season so far this year, some health questions again about Cole Stewart. I mean, Berrios is easily the Twins' top pitching prospect. Like I said, we kind of had a debate over at Twins Daily for who should be that number two prospect overall in the Twin system. Is it Berrios now or is it Sano? Sano got the nod, but it was close as we were trying to decide who should be in that number two overall spot. And man, Berrios is just fun. I like the fact that, I mean, a lot of the scouts and stuff like that, they don't rank Berrios as high maybe as the numbers show Berrios just because of his size. Sometimes he gets a lot of strikeouts high in the zone, which can, as you're moving up the ladder at AA and AAA, sometimes you can run into some issues if you're keeping that ball high in the zone. But obviously, it wasn't an issue for him this year at AA. So we'll see as he gets the bump to AAA. Is he going to be able to continue those numbers? But yeah, I mean, we saw this offseason he works his tail off to stay in shape, and it was probably in the best shape of his life coming into this season. So he knows what's at stake. He knows what he wants to do here, and he's probably a guy we'll see at some point, hopefully in September.
Yeah, I mean, well, and the other thing of it is, I think you mentioned this before, he'll have to come up and probably move into the bullpen, but, you know, what a weapon to be able to have to come out of that bullpen. And all of a sudden, not only do you have the ninth inning locked down with Perkins, and you have the eighth inning locked down with Fien, and then, you know, hopefully Meyer could round into form, and all of a sudden, man, a playoff roster starts to look pretty good.
Yeah, get Tyler J in the mix there too. If you have Meyer, Jay, Berrios, and Perkins, heck, Fien doesn't even have to.
Yeah, Fien's your mop-up guy all of a sudden. You know, and all these guys are throwing 95 plus, and you know,
looks like the Royals.
Yeah, exactly. Looks like the Royals bullpen of a year ago. So. Yeah, holy smokes.
We're being awful positive tonight. I think we need to tone this back a little bit.
Well, we could just talk about the last week, right? So Mike Pelfrey came back to earth. He's, you know, pumpkining pretty hard. You know, Trevor May had an up-and-down week. He had a pretty decent start, actually a really nice start the other day, and got robbed of a victory thanks to an unearned run from a Chris Herrmann throw into left field trying to get a runner at third.
Mm-hmm. And he was going against Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, who the Twins just were like waving their bat up there like matchsticks.
they all look like American League pitchers trying to bat in the National League.
Oh, man. Trevor May, I think he swung at a ball that was 3.5 feet out into the left-handed hitter's box. I mean, he just, like, waved at the pitch, like, hey, I'm here.
I enjoyed that he still uses on Twitter his picture of it, like it, the hit he got earlier this season.
So, but yeah, I don't know. I didn't get a chance to watch the last game where May pitched in St. Louis. So I watched the condensed game on MLB TV last night. And I don't know if you've ever watched one of those condensed games that they have. That's essentially, it's all the important pitches. So it's the third strike or it's the hit or a walk or whatever it is. You just get the one pitch from each at bat. And for a while there, it was like May strikes out. Cueto strikes out, then Suzuki strikes out, Vargas strikes out, then May strikes out, then Cueto gets struck out, then there's a walk, then there's a hit. But I mean, it was a 2-1 ball game, but it was like pitchers striking each other out for half of the replays on that condensed game. So I don't know, National League Baseball. What are you gonna do about it? But yeah, so the Twins lost 2 of 3. In Cincinnati, they lost 2 or 3 in Milwaukee, so, you know.
But Hunter was on a nice little streak in the end of that Milwaukee series. He had 2 home runs in the one game the Twins did win in Milwaukee. Hit another home run in the Sunday game that the Twins lost there. And then he had another home run this week already, too, in the Cincinnati series. So Hunter's bat, you know, when we first heard about the Hunter signing, you and I were a little bit down on the amount of money and what he could bring still offensively, defensively to this team. But, if you look at his numbers, I mean, compared to his career marks, he's right there and probably hitting for a little bit more power than I thought he was going to be able to do at age 39. His defense hasn't been a liability or anything out there in the outfield. I know defensive metrically he's been on the decline for a while now, but the bad plays that he's made have usually come in games that were already out of hand anyway. Hunter's week has been good, but just his overall performance this season has been better than I thought it was going to be, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he said this winter that, you know, he's just a consistent offensive guy, and that's what he's seen. He's continued to hit. His defense has been below average, but not horrendous. You know, and the things that he's doing off the field or in the clubhouse or in the dugout, I think, have really helped with so many of these inexperienced guys coming up and so many young guys coming up from the minor league. He is setting a good example of you know, how to keep it fun in the clubhouse, whether you're winning or losing or whatever. I think that's an important role. I don't know how you quantify that.
Dance party.
Yeah, the dance parties, the jumping around, like rub your backs together when the game wins for the outfielders thing that they do. You know, just those little things.
I like
things.
Those photos, like when Buxton's out there with, like, Buxton can jump like a foot higher than anyone else.
Well, and Rosario jumps pretty good, too.
Yeah, so you get those shots of all of them jumping together, and Buxton's a head taller than Torrey, and then Rosario's between Buxton and Hunter, just down there.
Yeah, he's hanging there.
Old man Hunter.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, like I said, he has been everything that the Twins advertised him to be this year.
Yep.
So, good on them, bad on us.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they, I mean, with the way he's been playing, you know, we talked about this maybe a couple episodes ago, but, you know, they'll probably work on some kind of contract for next season with him. I'm guessing, you know, it's kind of going to be like one of those Tim Wakefield type deals, you know, where as long as they'll just keep going 1 year at a time and see how his performance is on the field. And when he's getting to the point where he's ready to be done, they'll move him into some kind of position within the front office, or because it sounded like that's the direction he would like to go after he has retired.
Yeah. So it'll be cool. So speaking of guys that are also playing well, hundreds exceeding expectations, Brian Dozier is probably having his best year, right? So he didn't have a slow start or a hot start. He's just kind of been very consistent. He's hitting a bunch of home runs. He's still pulling the ball like a crazy man and still swinging a bunch of those high fastballs, but it seems like he is patient enough at the plate where pitchers can't just attack his weaknesses, and he gets into enough hitters' counts where they kind of got to throw the ball at him. And, you know, pitchers are guys, and they're, you know, they want to challenge him, and so they're still going to throw him that high fastball because that works with so many guys, and that's a pitch he loves to hit. And he's still hitting it. So he's had a great season. I think Aaron Gleeman had a stat out there. You know,
he's been the best second baseman since the beginning of last season by wins above replacement.
And it was by like almost a win and a half or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like clearly best guy over the last 2 years. So does he deserve to be an all-star? Probably, but because he doesn't play for the Kansas City Royals, he will be.
Yeah, and there's Jason Kipnis is having one hell of a first half. Kipnis will likely be one of the selections. Jose Altuve gets a little bit more. He's on the team with the best record in the American League, and he led the American League in hits last year, I think. Did he win the batting title too? I don't remember, but one of the two. So Jose Altuve is on there. I know Keith Law came out with earlier today on ESPN.com, like his top five guys that should be on the All-Star team. And Dozier was his number one for someone that, you know, might not end up on there because, are they going to carry three second basemen? Probably not, depending on how rosters shake out. But
right, and if you have six or seven guys from the Royals, you know, you have to have a guy from every team.
It was down to five the last count.
Well, I don't know. I think they're going to sneak another guy still in there. I think they could get Moustakas or Hosmer in there somewhere. I think they find a way to get one of those guys in.
Hosmer over Cabrera?
I'm not saying they should, or Moustakas over Donaldson, right? I'm not saying that they should do that, but I think it might happen. I mean, Royals fans have been voting like crazy SOBs, and I don't think that'll stop.
With fake email addresses.
Yeah, 65 million of them, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Does he deserve... I mean, if you went straight off of... If they didn't have to have someone from every team, if you went straight off of the best players, the guys having the best seasons, Dozier hands down deserves to be there. But if you go off of, once they have to get, you know, a certain amount of pitchers there, they have to get a certain amount of guys in there. It'll be interesting to see if he's one of the final vote candidates, if he weren't to make it. They do that last man on the roster thing where fans can vote, and that one's like unlimited. Like you can like vote a million times if you want. Just keep voting. So it'll be interesting to see if he's on that list or if there's some kind of injury. We've seen in previous years the Twins have gotten some all-stars that way. Like the year that Lariano had that amazing 2006 when Lariano had that amazing first half, he just didn't have enough really innings in it. But he and Maurer and Santana all ended up being all-stars that year. So that was kind of cool. The Twins had two all-stars last year with Suzuki and Perkins. Most likely Perkins is probably the hands-down choice again this year for the Twins if they only get one. But Dozier would be that close second.
And I mean, for me, the All-Star game is more about it's not just who has had a great first half or who had a great second half and a first half this year to get to a whole season. And you know, some of it's just about seeing your favorite guys out there. right? I mean, or the guys that for the last 5, 6, 7 years have been those guys, you know? So, I don't know. I've been only voting for the Kansas City Royals players because that's how I roll. But if I was actually voting for all-stars that I just wanted to see, I'd vote for Alex Rodriguez to be out there because, I don't know, he's an icon in baseball. You know, I might vote for some of these stud young guys. I mean, certainly would want to see Alex Rizzo, you know,
Alex
from the
Rizzo?
Cubs. Or, Anthony Rizzo and Alex Mike Goldschmidt.
Paul Goldschmidt?
I don't know.
They both play the same position. You can only pick one, Aaron.
Yeah, there's so many names out here. I'm really struggling with the National League.
NL's not your strong suit.
Yeah, pitchers hitting, I don't
know. I blacked out for a while. What happened?
Just there's all of this stuff. I mean, I would want to see guys that aren't just good right now. And Brian Dozier's been doing it for 3 years. So I think he certainly is in the conversation. And as good as he has been the last couple of years...
But nobody noticed on a team that's losing.
Yeah, because they've been terrible.
Yeah.
Right? And even this year, they're just over 500. It's not like the Twins lit the world on fire at some point where, you know, the only time people talked about the Twins was
May.
In the month of May when they're like, holy shit, the Twins are overachieving. Let's just write them off next week.
Mm.
You know, that was kind of the story. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think we'll see Brian Dozier in the All-Star game, though no fault of his own.
Yeah, it would have to come down to an injury or if he was the final vote candidate and Twins fans talked the Royals into helping them vote.
Yeah, which I don't think you're going to get that. I think the Royals fans would just, I don't know. If it doesn't have a KC on his hat, they're not voting for him.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I would definitely put Brian Dozier in there as my second baseman. He's in a tough spot because Kipnis, you know, as you said, but then also Robinson Cano, and he hasn't had, you know, a great season this year, but when you think of great second baseman or iconic second baseman in the American League, he's there, right? So he's...
And Pedroia, I mean, you know, there are some really good second basemen that have bigger names than Brian Dozier.
Yeah. They might have bigger production right now, but
certainly
the longevity and, you know. So what is an All-Star game? Is the guy who's been the best for the last year, guys had the best year and a half, or, you know, the best, is it a career thing? Can you look at all of that? It is what it is. I mean, when you have the fans vote, they're going to be all sorts of things. It's nostalgia, it's hot streaks, it's, you know, a guy that hits 7 home runs in the first week of the season, and so you've been watching him all year long, and even if he tanks after that, he was so good at the beginning of the season, he got a buttload of votes and is on the team. So it's all kinds of different things. So I don't know. I think Dozier should be there, but if it comes down to just finding a way to get a Twins player on this team, Glenn Perkins is going to be the guy because you're going to be able to put a pitcher on. You know, and I think Joe Mauer has more cachet nationally. So if you're just trying to, you know, build the team that way, it might be Mauer instead of Dozier as well.
Or Hunter.
Or Torrey Hunter. So, yeah, I think he's got an uphill battle and a long way to go, but he could be a guy.
Yeah. So, other news out of that came out today. Today was the first day for that marked the beginning of the international signing period. And the Twins, it had long been out there that the Twins had narrowed in on Dominican shortstop Wander Javier, I believe.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was a top 10 guy, I guess, out of this class. You know, one of the top tier guys. Gave him a $4 million bonus. So to put that in a little bit of perspective, they gave Miguel Sano $3.15 million. Granted, that was in That was a while ago. You know, 2008, 2009-ish.
And before there were limits.
Yep. Yeah. So there's a little.
And there was questions about how old Miguel Sano was. So a lot of things, but certainly this is a huge number.
Yes. Yeah. So $4 million, a lot of money. It sounds like that there's a lot to like about Javier. I mean, he's only 16, so I mean, there's a lot of development that needs to go on with him still. Sounds like he should have the tools to stick at the shortstop position for right now. I think defensively he's pretty strong. On the offensive side, there's some gaps within his swing. Some people feel like he has the potential to be one of the most exciting players out of this crop of players being signed today, if he can develop the right way. Yeah, there are some holes in that swing, but still has some power, has some ability to drive the ball to different parts of the field. And when you're throwing, you're not just going to throw $4 million at a kid that you don't feel strongly about. So the Twins did that today, so that it'll be interesting. You know, they have Nick Gordon in the system that they drafted high, you know, a little over a year ago to be a shortstop. And now they have this young man. Obviously, Gordon's a little bit further along, a little bit further developed. He's older in age, so that's it's not really going to be a conversation, you know, who's going to be the next shortstop for a while. And I think, I mean, the Twins have had a little little pitfall in developing shortstops as of recently. So if we have to have the debate someday over who should be the shortstop between Javier and Gordon, I would be much happier to have that debate than, you know, do we want to have Escobar or Nunez out there?
Yeah. Well, and with this Wander Javier, it's interesting. The Twins put a big number on him. There's no one less than him that's making more money than that in terms of looking at some of these July 2 international prospect ranks. So I think MLB.com had him at number 8. Baseball America had him at number 9. So all the guys behind him are in the $2 million range. You know, there are some guys in front of him that have big numbers on him, but there's certainly guys ahead of him on these lists that are, you know, $2-2.5 million. But then there's, you know, Lucius Fox, a guy the Giants signed with $6 million. That's just a humongous number. You know, I think it's Jalen Ortiz, the guy the Phillies signed, 4.2. Vlad Guerrero Jr.
The Blue Jays.
He made almost $4 million. And then there's a couple of Cuban guys that, you know, don't really count him on this list. But Yadier Alvarez, you know, the Dodgers signed him for $16 million. So there's money to spend out there, but the Twins are certainly throwing around money with the big boys. I mean, they're out there and they're doing it. And you know, but when you add in the draft picks and all, you know, there's a limit on how much you can spend on draft picks. The Twins, but we're still drafting near the top of the first round. So there's some serious outlay for the Twins in dollars on young kids this summer.
Yeah, and like we've been saying that, you know, it's not teams going out there and bidding as much as they can, you know, anymore. There are those limits that you talked about. So that kind of level some of the playing field. If the Twins are going to throw $4 million at Javier, they don't have that extra. They don't have $2 million to throw at another guy that they feel highly about. You know, so they kind of have to pick and choose, and you have to narrow in that search and know that your scouts are picking the right guy and that they have faith in that guy fitting your system and what you want to bring into your farm. So, besides that, then, another thing that's been out there this week is Ricky Nolasco has seen multiple doctors about his ailing ankle. Every time he's tried to even just toss, like a bullpen session or doing some long toss in the outfield, his ankle keeps flaring up. So we've got some issues there. So he's actually seeking a third opinion on his ankle. I mean, we talked earlier about Irvin Santana being back in the mix here. So the Twins aren't really short on starting pitching at this point. But it's tough to see after Nolasco will kind of bounce back a little bit to start this season. Was pitching better than anything we saw out of Nolasco from last year. So kind of disappointing for him to end up back on the shelf. And it sounds like it's going to be a little bit more of an extended stay than originally thought. I don't even know if we'll see him again this year with the way things are sounding. Like it might be something, you know, near the end of the season where if the Twins are out of it, they would bring Nolasco back maybe just to get some innings under his belt to get his feet wet again. But if they're still in the race, I don't see a reason to rush Nolasco back into the rotation. So,
Nolasco, it seems like he hasn't been healthy since he signed this contract with the Twins. And
mm-hmm.
you think back to 2 winters ago, Nolasco was the richest free agent contract the Twins had ever given out. And so things could not have gone more poorly. But if they could just let him get healthy, and I mean really, really be healthy and not have anything going on, he could be a guy that could slot into the bullpen even. You know, especially if the Twins continue to get this pitching. I mean, the pitching has carried this team this year. You know, their offense was hot, you know, a lot in May, but the pitching has been consistently good. May, June, I mean, in April even. I mean, that's the biggest surprise of this season so far is all the success that they have. Trevor May, you know, hasn't always gotten the results, but the peripherals look good. Mike Pelfrey pitched out of his brain. You know, Phil Hughes has had a down year, but it seems like he has bounced back lately in his last several starts. And you're going to get Santana back. You know, Gibson has been a pretty darn good version of Kyle Gibson. You know, he hasn't been the great and terrible guy that we had from a year ago. He's been much better than that. So, I mean, this is, you know, everything has gone as well as it could go right here. And we just got to kind of ride this wave of optimism. But Cody, we're almost an hour deep into this thing, and we haven't even got to the pitcher and hitter of the week. Yeah, the pitta patta of the great players of the last week. That's what I was trying to say.
Yes. So diving into the pitcher of the week, some of the nominees that we have, Kyle Gibson had a pretty good start, almost got through. Seven innings, finished an out shy of seven innings.
A heck of a start tonight as well.
Yes, very much so. In a very important game to get the Twins going within this big series with Kansas City. He's pitching in the seventh here again tonight as we're recording. But that other start this week, he only gave up 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 3 Ks. Tommy Malone had a good outing this week. 6 innings pitched, no earned runs. Struck out 7 in 6 innings, walked 3. And then J.R. Graham did some good things out of the bullpen. In over 5 innings of work, didn't give up a run, struck out 6, had a couple walks, and only 3 hits in those 5.1 innings. So we don't have like an eye-popping start or you know, like we had some previous weeks, we had some like 8 innings, no earned runs or 1 earned run, nothing like that this week that stands out. So, I mean, a lot of different options here. I don't know. I feel like maybe give it to the bullpen guy for a week.
Well, and don't forget about J.R. Graham. Remember early in the season, was it Lorenzo Cain that he plunked? Or who did he plunk and he broke his wrist? From the Royals, wasn't it? Or broke his a bone in his hand.
Yep. I know what you're talking about.
And then the comments,
I see him, but
the comments were like, how can you have a guy up here when he can't even throw the ball over the plate? He's totally not ready to pitch.
Alex Rios, is that right?
Yeah, Alex Rios. Yep, that's absolutely it. So I mean, you know, to have a great week from him and the strikeouts and limiting hits, that's very good. But I think for me, Tommy Malone, the 7 strikeouts, you know, this is the Tommy Malone that we've gotten recently that was
Graham had 6 strikeouts in almost as many in less than in two.
Yeah, but out of the bullpen, right? I mean, the expectations
are. Why
do
you hate the bullpen?
The expectations are different, right? You know, so I don't know. Tommy Malone, I like it. We need a left-hander, and if he's the guy that ends up going to the bullpen, he immediately becomes your best left-handed option out of the bullpen as well. So then the Twins need that.
Eric, you could be the Twins' best left-handed option out of the bullpen.
Yeah, but at least Malone would be good, a good left-handed option.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. Tommy Malone is my guy.
Let's leave pitcher of the week up as a question mark for right now. We'll go down to hitter of the week, and then
let's get tweets. Let's get some tweets from the listeners here. So we'll award this next week on episode 138.
Okay.
So I'll throw up a tweet from @TalkToContact, and it will be one of those awful social media tweets that says, "I'm putting it up right now. Picture of the week, RT for Malone." Fave for Graham.
Solid. And you're not gonna put their numbers in there or anything?
Nope. And it's the picture of the last week before this tweet even goes out. So it'll just be absolutely ridiculous. But we'll check in on this tweet a week from today.
Solid. So let's switch over to the offensive side of things then. The Twins, this one will be a little bit easier to decide, I think. Torii Hunter went 8 for 24 in the last week, hit 4 home runs, 3 doubles, 7 runs scored. Brian Dozier led the team in hits this week, had 9 hits, over 28 at-bats. He had a couple of home runs, couple doubles, scored 5 runs, leads the American League in runs scored at this juncture of the season. Joe Mauer was 7 for 22, so had a pretty good week as far as batting average, but not a single extra base hit to be found in his resume, so might have to kick that one to the side. And then Trevor Plouffe had a decent week, a Plouffe-esque type week, we shall say. 7 for 25, 1 home run, 1 double. So not eye-popping numbers, but getting it done offensively. But I don't know. It's got to be Hunter. 4 home runs.
And
3 doubles. 7 total extra base hits. Scored those 7 runs. That one's got to be hands down to Mr. Torii Hunter. So,
yeah, Torii Hunter pretty much earned all $10.5 million this week alone.
Yeah. So there you have it. The hitter of the week is going to go to Torii Hunter. Pitcher of the week, there's only 2 of us. We can't break the tie, so you have to break it for us. Go to Twitter, find the Talk to Contact. Follow us if you don't already, @TalkToContact. Retweet if you think that Malone should be the pitcher of the week, and favorite the tweet if you feel like J.R. Graham should be the pitcher of the week.
Early stat update. Erolf Pleiss retweeted the tweet. So 1 retweet for Malone, 0 faves for Graham so far.
Oh, man. He's going to get one here once I find it. if we're the only ones that vote.
It's going to be a dead heat again.
Yeah, 1-1.
1-1. So get out there, @TalkToContact, and retweet and fave that tweet. We're going to take a quick break here, refill our beers, and then we're going to come back, talk about the beers that we're drinking, and then I think I have a nice little conversation about things going around. All right, Cody, so I hope you got a cold beer in front of you. It's time for Paul's favorite segment, beers from around the world.
You hope I do. I hope you do, Mr. Orange Juice last week.
Orange Juice, I can't get anyone's name right this week, so you know I've got a good beer in front of me this week.
Yes, so I went and found, I don't know, I was searching for something a little bit different when I went to my local establishment. So I have from the Southern Tier Brewing Company. Apparently they are located in Lakewood, New York. But anyway, it's their Southern Tier double IPA. It's brewed with four varieties of hops and three types of malts. As far as double IPAs go, though, it's not my favorite. It's not bad by any means, but I've had... I think it's the... It's too malty and not hot. I would like to taste more of the hops or more of the citrus flavor that it usually accompanies an IPA. And this one, it's very malty. It's bready. I think you would.
Oh, bready! Yeah, I like your bready beer.
Yeah, like that's as it's been on my tongue here tonight as I'm on my second one. And it,
give me all the malts.
Yeah, that's. I would say it's more up your alley. So, yeah, if you find the Southern Brewing Company or Southern Tier.
Where are they?
They're from New York, Lakewood, New York.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's, you know, there's nothing good that comes out of New York, neither salsa or beer, I think.
It's like 8.2% alcohol.
Well, I got your beat.
And woo!
I got your beat. So I, too, went to the liquor store, and I was looking for something different and something very familiar. So it's that time of the year when Lining Kugels brings out the Canoe Paddler. And I think I've raved about the Canoe Paddler multiple times. So I picked up a sixer of Canoe Paddler. For whatever godforsaken reason, this liquor store only had six-pack bottles of Canoe Paddler. And I wanted to get, like, a 24 case of cans to take on a camping trip this weekend. So I have to like pop around to like a bunch of liquor stores tomorrow before we go camping and find a 24 pack of Canoe Paddler, because that's a great, great camping beer. But I also found something pretty weird and pretty delicious. So it's from three different brewing companies.
What?
It's from Surly, it's from Real Ale, and it's from 111 Floyd's. It is the Blacker. B-L-A-K-K-R. It's an Imperial Black Ale.
Okay.
It is 9.99% ABV.
Jeez.
Flip that right upside down. You've got the 666. There's a three-headed demon and fire on the can. So maybe that was intentional, the 999 there. But the description says this double black as night IPA is too massive for just one brewery's efforts. Blacker took the trinity of Real Ale Brewing, Surly Brewing, and Three Floyds Brewing to actualize this crushing ale. Holy buckets. This is it's like a Guinness and an IPA combined. Right, so I have it in a pint glass because I just wanted to see how dark it actually is. I'm holding the pint glass up to the light. No light is filtering through. Like, it doesn't even turn like a warm brown. I'm holding it right in front of a lamp. It's still just pitch black. So it's super dark. It has like that nutty flavor that you expect from a really dark beer. But also it has like a very subtle sweetness to it, almost like a pineapple-y aroma. So it's very complex. As I've been sipping on my second one here, the second one has warmed up a little bit. It hasn't come straight out of the fridge anymore. And so you get even more deeper, more complex flavors in it. It's really good. You can buy it in four packs around the metro area if you're interested. It's kind of pricey, so I paid $19 for 4 16-ounce cans. I don't know if it's $19 good. It's not as good as a Canoe Paddler, but
it's certainly worth the adventure to give it a try. It's not something I think that you'll see often. So if you see it, make the splurge, put a 20 down, tip your liquor store $1, because if you tip your liquor store clerk, they'll give you good recommendations. I recommend doing that. So recommend you to get a good recommendation. It's a double recommendation right there. So yeah, the Blacker from the Blacker Imperial Black Ale. It's very good. So go get one.
There you go, folks. Two rare beers, or beers that have not been on the show before. Sometimes we repeat, but not this week.
Not this week. We're all in. So yeah, let's just talk. I mean, around the league. I mean, you mentioned this earlier, and I wanted to bring this up again. The American League East is an absolute shit show. I think there's four teams that are within a game and a half of first place. Looks like I have a live updated schedule right now. There are four teams. The Orioles, Yankees are tied in first place. Blue Jays are in third, a half game back, and the Rays are a game back in fourth place. You got four teams within a game of first place, and then the Red Sox are 6.5 games back. The Red Sox,
which is doable,
they feel like a disaster this year. They don't have any pitching. Their hitting has been up and down. But the Orioles, Yankees, Blue Jays, and Rays, the Rays feel like they're overachieving to be with those other three teams. But
and they're getting Matt Moore back, and yeah, that's about it.
That's going to be a pretty interesting race, but it doesn't feel like it's interesting because any of those teams are particularly very good.
Oh, no. I feel like whoever wins that division is...
Yeah, that's the only team that's getting in. It's going to be the division winner.
They're going to get out in the first round, most likely.
Yeah, so it's going to be whoever that is, and then, you know, it's going to be the Royals. It's going to be then the Angels and the Astros. And that second wild card team is probably going to come down to being like, maybe the Mariners. Could three teams get in from the AL West? I don't know. Oakland hasn't
come out of the Central.
Oakland hasn't been as terrible as their record has been. They're still their Pythag makes them a very, you know, team that should be in, so they could have a hot second half. The Twins could certainly be in. The Tigers are a 500 ball club who aren't far out of it, and the Indians have been playing pretty good ball since pretty much the middle of May, so they're a team that could come on and challenge for that second wild card as well. So I don't know, but the AL East just in general is, I think it will be a fun division to watch. They'll beat up on each other, but because there's not really a great team out there, it'll be back and forth all the way. I expect the Orioles and the Blue Jays to kind of emerge. I think the Yankees will fall off a little bit, but if the Yankees stay close, they're a team that can spend money and will probably make some type of move to get some player and take on a contract maybe to do that, but they could stick out there as well. So it'll be an interesting AL East.
Yeah, definitely. I like the teams you talked about. I think the Blue Jays obviously have the offensive punch that you would want. Maybe not so much on the pitching side of things. Baltimore's got some good pieces as well. You know, there's some good guys. I mean, if the Yankees were... CeCe Sabathia has pitched like garbage this whole season. If he were able to figure something out and get back to the CeCe Sabathia of old, they have some guys that are playing very well for them this season. Brett Gardner has had a fantastic season. Jacoby Ellsbury, even though he got hurt and has been on the DL for a couple weeks, he's put up some strong numbers. So they're a team that if they could get healthy and get some pieces moving in the right direction, they could still find a way to put it all together here.
Yeah, and I think the one guy we need to talk about that's not team related here, though, we need to talk in the National League, Max Scherzer. So, what the hell is going on with this guy? Is he right now the best pitcher on the planet Earth?
Yes.
I mean, he had a one-hitter, he had a no-hitter, and then I think tonight he pitched like 8 1/3 of two-run ball and he got a loss.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is just absolutely at the height of all his powers. This is the ceiling of Max Scherzer and just doing it. Man, I mean, if you have MLB TV or if he's on Sunday Night Baseball or whatever, if you have a chance to watch this guy pitch baseballs, just do it. Just turn in, because, I mean...
Yeah, he's must-watch baseball at this point. Like, you know, like anytime Johan Santana during his stretch with the Twins, you know, when he was winning multiple Cy Young Awards, you had to tune in to watch. Scherzer's getting to that level. He might not be as dominant when it comes to the strikeout department, but he's doing some amazing things while he's on that mound right now. And the Nationals, they struggled to start the year, but they're coming on in that NL East. Might separate themselves from the rest of that pack as we're heading into the second half.
Yeah, I'm trying to look.
It should be a Scherzer, Chris Sale matchup to start the All-Star game, right? But
yeah,
I mean,
that's what I was just trying to pace it out. So Scherzer pitched today. If we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he'll pitch next Tuesday against the Reds. And then the Reds have a Thursday off day, so
the Reds or the Nationals.
Or the Nationals, sorry, yeah, the Nationals. So that he could potentially pitch the Sunday before the All-Star game on regular rest, which in case then we'd be deprived of seeing him in the All-Star game. And I would say maybe it'll depend on what happens in the first two games of that Orioles series. At Baltimore for the Nationals, because you know they're battling to get it, you know, and hang on to that NL East division right now. So, he could end up pitching that Sunday before the All-Star game. They won't get to see him, but if he doesn't, then he would be on, you know, 6 or 7 days rest going to the All-Star game. So, he certainly could be the guy that lines up and starts that game. It'd be pretty exciting.
Yeah. And Chris Sale's been on quite the run. I think he's up to 8 or 9 straight games with double-digit strikeouts. So
yeah, he was the American League Pitcher of the Week in news.
I mean, there's some other guys that Dallas Keuchel from Houston has had a pretty good season. I mean, you got the other big name guys too. Felix Hernandez is out there in Seattle. But yeah, I think Sale, just the role he's been on, that's the guy that, and the Royals manager has seen plenty of Sale over the years. And the Royals, sometimes when your manager's in the game, he'll go out there and start his guy if he knows it's his guy. And he wants to ride that ship, but the Royals don't really have a starting pitcher that's, you know, head and heels above everyone else.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Chris Sale, I just want to go back to that. So he had, you mentioned that the 8 straight starts with double-digit strikeouts. So that ties Pedro Martinez, like the MLB record for most double-digit starts in a row with, 10 strikeouts or more, or double-digit strikeouts starts in a row. So Chris Sale has 97 strikeouts over those 8 starts. Pedro Martinez, essentially at the height of the steroid era in 1999, had those 8 starts, and he had 107 strikeouts over his 8 games. So, as good as Chris Sale has been, Pedro Martinez was like another level better than that. It's amazing. I mean,
and he's a tiny little guy. He's like Jose Berrios.
He's the Jose Berrios. That's obviously that's what we have to look forward to with Jose Berrios is the second coming of Pedro.
Oh man, you got me really excited.
Oh brother, look out! You mentioned this earlier, I think, or someone mentioned it. Jose Fernandez is back from Tommy John surgery.
I talked about Matt Moore, but did you see Fernandez today?
He had a dinger off of Kane, and he pimped that fucker.
So Fernandez, he hasn't lost yet in the Marlins' new stadium. I mean, granted, he had a year of Tommy John in there as well, but hasn't lost at home yet. It hit a home run today. Was 1-for-3 with a home run. Picks up the W. I think he still allowed like 4 earned runs in 6 innings. Struck out like somewhere like 6-ish. It's good to see some of these young guys back out there. Matt Moore, Jose Fernandez, obviously. Both were, or Fernandez won the NL Rookie of the Year. I don't remember if Moore won the AL Rookie of the Year in his rookie campaign. But, to see some of these young guys back healthy, adds a little excitement anyway to the game, especially with a picture of Fernandez's capabilities, to go out there and strike out guys, just that power pitcher. He was pretty dominant during his rehab stint as he was pitching in the minor leagues leading into this first start today. So pretty cool to see him back on the mound and then to have some offensive success too was another quarter in the cap.
Yeah. So I don't know, Cody, we're getting close to an hour and a half here. So I want to kind of ramp things down here real quick. So a couple of former Twins notes before we send things away. So the Tigers acquired, why anyone would acquire him, I don't know. But the Tigers acquired from the Tampa Bay Rays former Twin Alexi Casilla. Are things so bad in Detroit where they might need to consider putting an Alexi Casilla on a major league roster?
I mean, infield depth, I guess. We're carrying Eduardo Nunez.
Well, I would take Eduardo Nunez every day.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. The Tigers aren't where they want to be right now. Maybe Alexi Casilla is the magic piece.
Yeah, bring that piranha defense over there.
Some head first slides into first base.
Yeah, well, you need a little bit of excitement, I guess. He's over there. And then the former Twins general manager, Andy McPhail.
From way back, like World Series days.
Yeah, the glory days. He got hired as a team president in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is...
Well,
the Phillies are a shit show.
Yeah, he's like assistant to the GM or like some weird title right now, and then he'll take over the role, his full role, at the end of the season. So they're saying that he's probably going to clean house once he takes over for real, and so there could be the possibility that maybe like Ron Gardenhire would end up there as a manager. I've heard Gardy's name today was out there on Twitter as maybe a possibility for the Mets job. I mean, because he played in that organization at some point. It'll be interesting to see anywhere if Gardy is to end up in either of those places. Kyle Gibson gets through 8 innings tonight.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. He just walked off with some swagger.
Yeah, because he had two guys on base, and he still got out of it with only one out.
I can't believe he was still pitching at that point. Yeah. You probably watched this game at home hours ago, and we're just excited about what's happening right now.
But is this one of the first times Paul Molitor has led a guy? Usually Paul Molitor's had a quick hook, I feel like. So I feel like it's a little bit breaking news just in the fact that Gibson was allowed to go out there and to stay out there, even at over 100 pitches.
Well, yeah, and then continued, you know, deep into that inning after he, you know, he walked a guy, stolen base, guy on second, you know, continued to let him go. And I think more than anything, maybe this is just a little bit of bullpen fatigue for Paul Molitor.
Yeah.
You know, he saw some of these late leads get coughed up and, you know, he's like, well, I guess, you know, I mean, two guys on and you're over 110 pitches and you leave your starter out. I mean,
buckle up, boys and girls. It's a new Twins era.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Let's hope Perkins doesn't F it up in the ninth.
Oh, geez. Yeah. We'll have to eat some crow then. So, yeah. So, anyways, thanks for listening this week. You probably enjoyed the Twins game on Thursday night as much as we did. We're enjoying it right now. So, thanks for hanging with us for 90 minutes on Talk to Contact. Thanks to Egon's Unicat for playing us in and out of all these segments. And we'll see you right back here next week on Thursday evening.
Break me in.